We are back. It is episode 48 of the CCHA Reporters Corner, brought to you by Midwest Sports Plus, your home for all streaming for Forum Communications, whether it's high school games, some select college games around the Midwest, South Dakota, Minnesota. I know we've dabbled a little bit in Wisconsin, I think, towards the Superior side with Duluth, but a subscription to Midwest Sports Plus gets you a subscription to the Bemidji Pioneer, Sioux Falls Live, St. Cloud Live, the Grand Forks Herald, the Duluth News Tribune, the Brainerd Dispatch, the West Central Tribune, the Rochester Post Bulletin. Who am I forgetting, Trent? I mean, there's so many forum properties now. I know Dom Izzo does Inforum, the biggest one, the people that cut all our checks, probably should mention them. What do we got? Dom Izzo, does he do his show on Midwest Sports Plus? I know he's Hot Mike with Dom Izzo. Is pretty popular
Nate
up in the Fargo
show. Nate Brown shows on
Happy
there.
Hour. I know the people of Sioux Falls love Happy Hour. So, and like I said before, a subscription to one gets you a subscription to all. It's the best newspaper subscription you can get in all of media right now. And please support local media. It's a big evergreen statement, but I'm one half of your co-host, Jared Urbato with the Bemidji Pioneer. With me is the better half of the co-host, Trent Singer from Sioux Falls Live. And producer Cordell Wright on camera right now.
The ones, the twos, and the threes today, folks.
How we doing, boys?
Doing good.
Pretty good.
Doing good.
It's a Friday morning. This is exciting.
I know.
The easiest podcast we've ever had to plan.
Didn't have to coordinate with anything. Didn't have to go around anything else. Maybe this is perfect right here.
So today we're doing a mailbag episode. Trent and I have spent the last couple weeks, probably 10 days, polling questions, trying to get some responses. We got a whole host of questions that were sent in about the CCHA, about college hockey as a whole. No guest on the show today. If you want to listen to a guest, go listen to last week's with Nathan Pilling. It was a fantastic episode. I don't think we planned out next week's episode yet, but I would imagine we'll probably get a guest back on next week. We got to get back Brad Schlossman on the show to do a whole college hockey debrief. We have some other non-CCHA guests we've been kind of poking around at, seeing if we could find a time to get one of them on the show. I'd love to get Don Lucia back on the show at some point, maybe before the Mason Cup, just to get his outlook at the league at large.
I'd love to get some guys out east on this show to maybe talk a little about what's going on out east. He could fill us in a little bit more. I got some connections. We'll see.
If you're a serious radio listener.
Well, we have – I think it's really interesting because Brad and I kind of talked about it this week on the CCHA show too. It's interesting when you look at the teams that are on the bubble, the CCHA teams that are on the bubble, when you talk about Augustana, St. Thomas, Minnesota State, and then the Hockey East teams that are on the bubble. Like, there is a lot going on there where teams out in Hockey East need these CCHA teams to lose, and the CCHA needs these teams to lose. And it's pretty contentious right there. And you're talking about just like .02 is what separates Augie from 15 to 16 right now. I mean, it is razor thin. You're 100% right.
And then there's the wrinkle in there of how some teams out east still need teams to keep winning. I mean, like where Providence beat St. Thomas, and every bad loss St. Thomas takes, it's a slight hit on Providence then too.
It's cool though, in the sense that who would have thought? I mean, I really didn't even think that the CCHA would be in this position at this point in the season. I mean, it is a deep league this year, and I think a lot of eyes are on it for a lot of reasons. Including the playoff implications, and I think this playoff race is going to be exciting. We talked all about five teams that have a really good chance. I think if the Beavs can turn it on, I mean, you're talking about six teams that like really have a legitimate chance. Lake State's a sneaky 17.
I would also, just with Rourke Appleby, I would say it has to be seven. It hasn't been the best run for Rourke Appleby as of late, just with Lake State struggled. I know they had the 1-0 win at Bowling Green, but when he's on, it's hard to say a top three goalie in this league, because the top three are Ayoung Ash and Kotai and Tracy and whatever order you want. And then you know, Max Hildebrand made 35 saves last night. Bartiszkiewicz has been outstanding for Michigan Tech. Rourke Abel. I mean, it's such a deep, deep goalie league. And
St. Thomas's goalie room. Like,
yeah, but just I think a second round draft pick just sitting in that goalie room. Yeah. And he's not even starting consistently. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a deep goalie league. But yeah, so let's get into it. I mean, it's we got a lot to go through. And first and foremost, thank you to everybody who's sending questions. If this goes well, we'll keep doing these, maybe kind of like a once a month, once every 2 months kind of thing. Once the, you know, thinking more towards the future for next year, or you do a big one in the summer too. But thanks for sending in questions. We got some fun ones. We got some quick hitters at the end too, that I know it made all three of us laugh when we got some of those ones sent in. So, so how do we want to do this, Cordell? I know you had an idea of kind of making it a little bit of a game showy kind of thing.
I'll just kind of take over here, and since you guys know everything, I'll just ask the questions to you. You guys obviously have seen the questions, so it won't be as like a big surprise, but I'll just kind of take over and run it like a game show here.
We got to be fast and loose by saying we know everything too, because I'm a grade A idiot.
Can you get the music going?
We'll play some tunes here or something. Okay, I'll find a way to plug that in. We'll pop into the first question here. This one comes from Nick Mueller via Twitter. And with St. Thomas on their way out, will the CCHA stick to eight teams, or do you guys see them expanding the conference? And we'll just kind of go in order if I see you on the screen here. So we'll have Trent take this question first.
I'll be honest, I don't. Everything I've heard from Don Lucia, they like the eight teams and they want to stay at eight teams. I know there's been a lot of talk adding Lindenwood, some of these independents in this area, like just in that what would qualify as Western hockey, right? There's a lot of people who have speculated and just been like, you know, will they add? I've been asked that question a lot before. I've had interviews with Don. I've asked Don straight up about it before in the past, and he does not sound super interested in it. And a lot of it has to do with that line of communication being open, first of all. And I think secondary, he likes the eight teams. The league likes the eight teams. It makes sense. You know, all eight teams are able to qualify for the playoffs. You don't have that one team that's left out. I don't know. I don't see it really wanting to expand. Now, that being said, like, I think if something were to happen where you saw a real big fracture in college hockey, where you had a breakdown of all the teams, you know, and you start seeing teams switch conferences drastically, even though that's like a big no-no, because you have to, you know, leagues want you to stay and stick around. Like, teams jumping around from conference to conference isn't something that's like advantageous for programs.
And it's very expensive.
Oh, it's like, super expensive.
Like, St. Thomas not having to pay an exit fee to the CCHA, which I'm pretty sure that's still the case, unless there was an amendment.
I think they changed it.
So they did have to pay an exit fee?
No, I just think they changed it after St. Thomas.
Oh, right. Yes. But St. Thomas doesn't have to leave or pay to leave the CCHA. Nope. To kind of put in perspective of how bizarre that is, it's when Upper Iowa, a Division II school, left the NSIC, they had to pay a six-figure amount. I can't remember how much it was, but my gut tells me it was like, I think, $250,000, but I'm not 100% sure. So don't you know, take that with a grain of salt. But they had to pay their D2 conference to leave and go to a different D2 conference and a worse D2 conference. But St. Thomas leaving for the NCHC didn't have to pay. I don't know what the admission cost is for St. Thomas to get into the NCHC. I would imagine there's some payment there, but it's very expensive for schools to up and leave a conference and go to a new one and then go to a new one after that. Like, it's not feasible. I think, like Trent said, the CCHA wants to stick to eight teams. I think there's, if they're ever going to expand, they won't expand back to nine. They go to 10. And there's a model in place for 10 team conferences. Like, the NCHC will go back to it next year. The old WCHA was a 10 team conference. I think the Lindenwood aspect is really interesting, because I poked around at this in the past when St. Thomas was rumored to leave, and Obviously, it coincides with Augustana being promoted to a full Division I program. The thing with Lindenwood is it's very similar in a lot of ways to Minnesota State trying to join the NCHC, which they've tried year after year after year and have never gotten in. If the CCHA wanted Lindenwood, I think they'd already be here. And a lot of it is travel. It's not an easy travel for.
Yep.
It's a horrible geographical place in the CCHA. And, you know, I think Minnesota fans, you know, fans of teams in Minnesota and Augustana would say, like, well, you know, Bowling Green isn't geographically, you know, in line with the rest of the CCHA as well. And then then the trip to Bowling Green from the Upper Peninsula or from Big Rapids is a little bit more bearable than it is from St. Thomas or Augustana or Bemidji State or Minnesota State. The league is essentially split into two halves. And, you know, I think the league does a halfway decent job of trying to make sure that, like, okay, Bemidji State, if you're not going on the road to see one of the teams this year, like this year it was Ferris State. I think last year it may have been Lake State, but I can't remember. You know, it doesn't always line up like that. Like some years teams just get brutal travel schedules in there. But I think adding Lindenwood to that makes it a whole lot worse. And so Lindenwood, I think, would be, you know, if there were, let's say, like another NSIC team wanted to get hockey, like Jamestown, Mary, or Minot, which I know we have a question about that later. But if one of them wanted to get into college hockey and found a way to get into the CCHA, I think then the opportunity for Lindenwood would probably open up a little bit more. But I bet there would also be maybe some poking around to see if a second NSIC team wanted to add hockey is there as well. I mean,
I think another question too to pose: if a team were to leave of the eight that are remaining, which team would that be? And then would Lindenwood be considered? And I think that the door may actually be open then.
That's a great question. Because, you know, I think
Minnesota State and Augustana are the two that you would probably, the first two you'd think, like, possibly some point maybe leave.
I don't see
Augustana leaving at all.
I don't see either of them leaving.
I don't know about Minnesota State. I don't know. I mean, I know their fans do not want to be in the CCHA. A lot of them do not. I've seen plenty of it.
For sure. And I think the Minnesota State one is interesting because they've actively tried. I mean,
they've tried.
Since the WCHA disbanded year after year, they tried getting into the NCHC. The problem for Minnesota State getting into the NCHC is they don't have the potential to steal recruits from the Big Ten as much as St. Thomas does. And a lot of it is money. It comes down to money and the financial backing that St. Thomas has. But I earnestly believe a bigger part of that is location and the fact that St. Thomas is geographically centered in the metropolitan area of Minnesota. And when you have a youth hockey hotbed like there is in that area of the country, St. Thomas has a better chance of stealing recruits from the Gophers, from Wisconsin, than Minnesota State does. That is not a slight at Minnesota State. They recruit above their means every single year. There's a reason why they are one of the top teams in the CCHA year after year. And even in a down year like this one, where they had to retool and rebuild all of their entire forward lines, they are still in striking distance of an at-large position in the NCAA tournament. This is not me dogging on Minnesota State as much as I have done in the past, but this is just the reality of the situation, and that is they are not geographically located to steal an abundance of recruits from Big Ten schools. St. Thomas is, and St. Thomas has the money to go with it. That being said, with how often that Minnesota State has been denied entry into the NCHC, I don't see them leaving. I think it's more plausible. To be fair, I don't see any CCHA team leaving.
No, I don't either.
The answer is no. Like that, let's get that out of the way. I do think the team would be Bowling Green because one, Bowling Green has Division I football money coming in. Like these conversations have to start with dollars and cents. And in a revenue sharing era, that has to matter more than anything else. And if Bowling Green like has a good couple of years in football where they sneak in as the at-large team into the the college football playoff, and they opt into the house settlement, and they can start doing a lot of this revenue sharing, and the institutional, financial backing just gets a little bit more padded, and they want to say, hey, we can take a jump. Sure. The problem is for Bowling Green is that they'd have to find a conference to go into. I don't see it. I guess ECAC would be the only one, but even then they're even worse geographically located, worse than they are now. And it's a lot more, it's a very expensive thing. And now you're just burning all the money to do it. So I guess, like, gun to my head, I'd probably say Bowling Green, but even then I don't see any CCHA team leaving because of the dollars and cents.
I don't either.
All right. We'll move on to the next question here. This one comes from Nathan Ryder from the Two Paper Guys podcast. He actually has two questions. We'll start with the first one. This one goes to you, Jared. How has the new hockey landscape changed things for both of you in terms of how you cover the respective teams' recruiting?
A lot. I have a perfect example of this. This morning, I had an interview I had to do at 7:30. We started recording this around 9, and I had an interview at 7:30, and I woke up at around 6:45, and the first 40 minutes of the day I spent going through recruiting stuff. And actually, a Bemidji State recruit just signed a WHL deal with the Brandon Wheat Kings this morning, and it just puts a lot more on the plate. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but but 2 years ago, before the CHL opened up, it was, all right, let's check on, you know, how the BSU recruits are doing in the BCHL, and here's how the two or three of them are doing the USHL and the NHL. And so now it's just, there's just more to kind of stay on top of from a recruiting perspective. I enjoy it. I've had the most fun learning about the CHL. I mean, like, from an American hockey, junior hockey perspective, like, you know, I think there was like a knowledge gap for me in the CHL before this opened up. And I think when the rumor started that it was, you know, the NCAA eligibility would open up for CHL kids is when you start getting into the CHL more, and specifically the WHL. I know Bemidji State is, I would imagine they'll pull 60 to 70% of their CHL recruits from the WHL over time. Just Western Canadians have been a mold that has fit Bemidji State for a very long time. And it's the Western Hockey League. So it has changed. And I think it's harder to evaluate players. I think we got to a standard for the BCHL and the AJHL and, you know, whatever other tier two junior league or the USHL. We've had a standard of how players compare to other players over time and what point totals mean and how size impacts each other. And the CHL opening up is a little different because a lot of the players are a little younger. Point totals are a lot higher. It's a different style of hockey. And I think going into this year, there was a lot of guessing as to which players would work, you know, in college hockey because of their size. And despite them having maybe 90 to 100 to 110 points, you know, it doesn't always translate one for one. That's been a lesson I've had to learn a little bit this year is, you know, where the players come from and what they did in the CHL is part of it. But size and intangibles and trying to measure those intangibles also has to matter too. Not that it didn't matter before, but it's just evaluating how much they matter in comparison. So yeah, it certainly changed.
It hasn't changed a lot for me. I mean, but that's only because Augustana hasn't recruited in the CHL at all. I mean, you know, their recruiting model has stayed the same. They still go USHO, yeah. NAHL. They're finding guys in the AGA and the SASC that they really like. I mean, there's Max Checkerbarty, yeah. Brett Meerman. I mean, these are guys that have been pretty big for them that they've gotten from minor junior hockey leagues in Canada. And
Bulgakov.
Bulgakov is an all guy. I mean, and
rescued him from Aberdeen.
Yeah, stole him out of Aberdeen, right? I think what one interesting thing you bring up, though, is I think the mold, like, it is hard to evaluate players. I think the best way to sort of that I've seen to sort of evaluate is you look at that Bowling Green roster, what 10 guys that they brought in from the CHL. And, you know, you kind of see how they've translated to the college game. A guy like Ty Higgins, he 80 points in the queue last season. And a guy that we were kind of wondering, okay, you know, is, you know, how is he going to fit with this team? And will he be, you know, will that defense translate to college hockey? And man, he's been really good in the second half of the season. I mean, they've got other guys too, Braden Crampton, Brandon Why Not, which is the greatest name in the conference. because why not? And then they, I think Steinman too. They got Steinman from the Q. They've gotten some guys from the CHL that have been immediate impact guys. Noah Morneau. I mean, you can go up and down the list of guys that they've brought in that, you know, it's different. You're right. Jared's 100% right. Like it's different for every player.
The hardest one that I found to try and compare to are the U Sports transfers. Like, I think Bemidji State is the easiest one to look at because of Connor McLennan and Oliver Pierre. They've been two of the better forwards for Bemidji State this year. And I had way lower expectations than what Oliver Pierre and McLennan have done this year. I thought it, to be honest, like when I talked to Territory about adding the U Sports kids, I was a lot more skeptical of it than he was. And there's a reason why I'm sitting here doing this and he's at Morning Skate right now. But I was just a little nervous about the translation from U Sports to college. And I think that's a much more interesting thing to break down because it's a lot of CHL kids that just were late bloomers, and like Oliver Pierre is the best example of that. And he's been one of the better forwards in the CCHA this year. And to expect that kind of coming out of U Sports is not something I expected. And so I think it'll change my evaluation of players that do transfer into the CCHA to U Sports. And two, it's learning, you know, what U Sports programs are producing high-end players too. I mean, that's no different than college hockey, where there are some programs that are really good at developing kids to either take that next step, whether it's to pro hockey or to a Division I school in the NCAA. And not to say that it's always a jump from U Sports. There are a lot of U Sports teams that would definitely hold their own against some college hockey teams in the NCAA. But it is just a little bit of a different evaluating process.
And then so now we'll just ask, it was kind of a yes or no two-part question, so we'll make this just a quick yes or no. Do you spend more time checking scores from the CHL and standings, Jared?
Yeah, I do. I still have my Flow Hockey subscription, so I do watch. Like, you know, last night I didn't have a game to cover locally, so I was going back trying to watch a little bit of Aiden Ziprick in the QMJHL. I do keep up. I don't keep up as much with scores, but definitely standings. And then weekly, I'll go through and look at box scores, see what players did, you know, whatever and stuff.
Trent?
Not really.
Not as much, yeah. But the reality is,
I know, the good teams, like Everett's doing really well. Yep. Prince Albert's always pretty good. The problem is there's not like a lot of there's no Augie kids coming out of the CHL right now. If they were, I think this would 100% be a different answer, but not really. I'm looking at more so you got to understand, like, I cover the conference, the CCHA, so I'm locked into all the conferences across college hockey. And then I'm also checking the standings pretty regularly for high school sports standings here in the Sioux Falls area. So that's
yeah, this is a good time to probably put in here that Trent and I, like, covering college hockey is at probably most 50% of the job.
Yeah,
like,
probably.
We have other it's fitting a lot of this stuff in, like, when we're not doing the stuff that we kind of have to do, like, on a week-to-week local level, too. But,
right.
Yeah. Which is, I think, the same for every college hockey reporter and forum to some extent. Like, even Schloss has games where he goes to on the weekday that, you know, you'd be like, why is Brad Schlossman out of this high school game? But
right, you
know, stuff has to get covered.
I agree. We'll move on to the next question here. This one comes from Nathan Sema. He asked the question on his the Tech Hockey Guide Discord, and this is kind of a fun one. This might be quick. It might need a little bit of explanation for each one, but we'll kind of bounce back and forth. We'll have you name one player from each school in the conference that you think is most likely to move on and play in the NHL. And so we'll start with you, Trent. Could you name a player from Augustana currently that you believe has a shot of playing at the next level?
I mean, the clear answer, I think. Well, I don't know if it's clear.
There is one clear answer.
I think Hayden Hennin is
for
sure. I mean, he's already been at two development camps. He'd be my pick for Augie. I mean, yeah, you could make a case for
I think he might sign. It wouldn't shock me if he signed after this season. Like, a big mobile defenseman, two-way kind of guy. Like, you know, he fits the Chase Pietola mold in a lot of ways. Yeah. I think Chase Pietola was a lot more offensive, but
I just wrote a story about the defenseman today, just because they're number three scoring defense in the country. But in digging into it, I didn't realize if you knew this, Jared, but the top two skaters in the CCHA are Owen Baumgartner and Hayden Hennen, that top D pairing. I mean, those are the one and two in minutes in this conference.
Really? I would not have expected them to be
third, I think.
That's where I would have went, just because Bemidji's had some issues. They've had a rotating cast in their third pair, and Thornton and Wolf eat a lot of minutes. But I'm not surprised about Hayden Hennen. I mean, he had I think it was like six straight games in October where it was over 26 minutes a game or something like that. Yeah. It's nuts. I actually do think he will play in the NHL someday. Like, not every name that we say on this list is somebody that I or Trent will think will play in the NHL. I do think Hayden Hennen will. Like, the way he moves and how mobile he is for his size is pretty rare.
Well, and the thing is too, is if you ask Rabs about him, you can't quantify his importance to this team, because it extends further than the amount of minutes he plays. I mean, yeah, he closes time and space. He's an incredible defender. I think beyond that, what he's teaching this young defensive core in terms of how to defend and back check and create offense, to get that transition offense going is invaluable. A guy who can teach that on the ice is so invaluable than a coach that's trying to, you know what I mean? Like, he understands what they're trying to do defensively and is able to teach it to the younger guys. So he's kind of the total package for them in terms of the size, the skating ability. He can play both. I mean, yeah, he can create offense. Like, I've seen plenty of it, but he's also such a good shutdown defenseman.
And then we'll move on now to the next team. Jared, who from Bemidji State do you believe could play in the NHL or has a possibility of playing there?
The easy answer is Max Vig. He's drafted by Montreal, and that's not the reason why. I think if you'd watched him in October, November, you'd say this kid has no chance of making the NHL. And then I think if you watched him in January, you'd say, when is this kid going to sign? He's been Bemidji State's best defenseman for the better part of 2 months. And I think that once he got over the kind of learning curve of playing in college hockey, it's been I wonder how much worse that streak could have gotten for Bemidji State without Max Vig. And he's been jumping in offensively, which is not something he expected to do. But I think the thing about Vig that really sets him up in this realm is that he is so smart and he is so cognizant of his role and what he needs to do to be successful. I remember chatting with him back in November, and he's like, yeah, you know, I'd love to have more points. I'd love to be the point per game guy that I was for a little bit in junior and he certainly was in high school. But he's like, you know what? How many players in the NHL are paid because they are, because of their offensive skills? And he's like, 9, maybe 10 guys in the defensemen that are paid for strictly their offensive ability. And he's like, to get to where you want to go, you have to understand your role and understand what you're good at, and not just be good at it, but be great at it. And I thought it was such a mature answer for a freshman. And so Vegas, the one, if there's an undrafted kid, I don't think he's going to play in the NHL. To be honest, I really don't think he'll get to the AHL, but Riley Funk is just a kid that finds a way to work. And you take a kid with that size and his speed when he gets going, I think skill-wise, he's probably not there. That's what's going to hold him back. I thought he'd take another jump on the skill side of things this year. But Riley Funk is one of those kids. And to go back to a Brad Schlossman interview we did last year where he was talking about Cole Smith and how Cole Smith was he came from Steinbeck and just was like a roster legend, filler baby. Guy. Yeah, roster filler guy for North Dakota. And now he's signed, I think, 2 or 3 NHL contracts just due to the hard work and the kind of the want to get there aspect of it. Like, Riley Funk has that. And he's a guy where it's like 3 or 4 years down the road, he gets, you know, an NHL debut. It wouldn't shock me, but it'd be, I don't see it happening. But those are the two that kind of stick out. Maybe Oliver Peer too, but even then he needs more size. So
Issa Parekh would be a cool one, you know, because his brother's already there.
And he needs a lot more size. Like, well, he would need like 30 to 40 more pounds.
Yeah, but it'd be cool. It'd be cool to have two Parekhs.
Yeah, it would be cool.
In the NHL.
Yeah.
Max and Vig, yeah, easy pick. I think, you know, already as a freshman too. And I think I had him high up on some rookie of the year list. What round was he? Seventh, fifth, sixth?
Seventh what round. Was it was last round in the draft. Yeah. He was the only CCHA player drafted this year. Yeah.
So Vig is the obvious answer for sure. I think that's probably where I'd go too.
We'll move on to the next team here, and then that'll be for you, Trent. Who do you believe from Bowling Green has the chance to play at the NHL level?
Well, that's a tough one, man. It's a lot of interesting guys. I'd say, honestly, if you're talking size and the amount of minutes, Gustav Sternberg is a guy who plays a lot of minutes. Definitely has the size. Maybe needs to slow up on the penalties a little bit.
A little.
he's an interesting person to consider. I'd say Cole Moore. Cole Moore's got a shot too, just at the pro level. I mean, when you're that big in goal, to me, that there's a lot of teams looking for that sort of size in net. He's certainly got the size. I don't know. It's interesting. Who do you got, Jared?
Cole Moore was the one that jumped out. And like I said, a lot of this comes down to size, but specifically for goalies, size has to matter a little bit more. Cole Moore, listed at 6'6", 200 pounds. I mean, you can't teach size, right? Like that's the age old saying. And when it comes to evaluating draft prospects for pro prospects for any sport, I do kind of think that like maybe a Dominic Rymen could get in. I mean, he's 21 points in 26 games as a freshman. I think he's 6 foot. If you're just trying to like throw some darts and find a forward who can make it, maybe Noah Morneau. It's hard to project that out. I mean, Noah Morneau is 6 foot, 185 pounds. He's got 13 points in 21 games, but I think, Sternberg, if he can play a little bit more of a two-way game and stay out of the penalty box. I mean, he has a lot of offensive upside. He only has 5 points in 17 games this year, but he's been hurt, kind of been shuffled around a little bit, trying to find him the right pairing. I know he started the year with Breck McKinley, and then now I think he's not playing with Ty Higgins because McKinley's playing with Higgins. So, but yeah, I would probably say Cole Moore. Just, I mean, the 6'6 frame, he'll probably be around 225 pounds. And the thing about Cole Moore is that his intangibles have never been questioned in the fact that he is a very sharp, quick, big goalie, and to find quickness at that size is so rare. So I'd probably go with Cole Moore.
The wrong button there. Who's from Ferris State, Jared, do you think has a shot?
Oh,
it's tough.
Flip
and if it's nobody, then you can, eight people, or
the answer is probably nobody. And it's no shame on Ferris State, because let's be honest, how many kids from the CCHA end up playing in the NHL, right? I mean,
true.
Sam Morton is one of the greatest CCHA players, and he's only had a handful of NHL games. And we're talking about the undrafted guys. I'll go with Xavier Jean-Louis, a defenseman. Again, I'm going back to the size. He's 6'3", 212 pounds. He's got 13 points in 28 games. He's been probably Ferris State's best player. Again, where would Ferris State, like how much worse would Ferris State be without Jean-Louis this year? I'll get to see him play in person for the first time tonight, but it's few and far between for Ferris. I don't know. Do you got a better one, Trent?
I mean, I'm going to go with the leading goal scorer, Gavin Best, friend of the pod. Maybe he can work his way up. He's 6'2", good size, and yeah, I don't know. Maybe Gavin Best, he played at Michigan State, you know, he get recruited to go to a Big Ten school and, you know, eventually makes his way to Fair State's a captain this year. I mean, there are some intangibles there. I also, in talking with Gavin, wouldn't be surprised if he got into like the coaching route. You know, and there's a lot of guys that we've talked to on this show. Dalton Norris is another one too. If he wanted to get into coaching, I think he's got a future ahead in that. Yeah, Nathan Pilling, a guy we talked to last week, wouldn't surprise me at all to see him coaching one day.
Lucas Wallen.
I like literally every guy that we have on the show is like, you could
probably. Will Svendahl too. Like, I think he could be a coach.
100%. 100%.
He would be a fantastic Minnesota high school hockey coach.
Yeah, you think so?
Easily. Like, that kid's got high school hockey coach written all over him when he's like 38 years old. Yeah.
I can see that.
So we'll move on to the next team here, and we'll go to Trent. Lake Superior. Is there anybody on their team that you think stands out as an NHL talent?
Well,
this one's easy.
Is it Connor Milburn? I mean,
yeah,
Connor Milburn.
If anybody, right? Like, if anybody,
he just like there's a lot about Connor Milburn's game that reminds me of Hunter Bischoff. Like he wins on every college hockey team. You know, bigger body, center position, and solid, like just solid player, like all around game, and consistent too. Since he's gotten to the college level, he's definitely going to be going pro. Now, reaching the NHL level is going to be
a lot to ask.
But
he hasn't had the year that he's had since his sophomore year. Yeah. Like it's been a little tough. And he's had some injuries too. Like that, we have to make note of that because the injuries did kind of set him back in his junior year. And
I'll say this too. One thing about, you know, the line that he had his last couple seasons was tremendous too. He's lost some, you know, so a few guys graduated that Tritt was on that line. I'm pretty sure. He had Westcott, I think, that he played alongside a little bit too. Well, Westcott was a centerman, so maybe he didn't. Yeah, I can't remember. But still, like, you know, it's just.
But you're playing on a power play with Westcott. Yeah.
Yep.
So it's probably Connor Milburn, but I wouldn't put money on it.
Anybody from Michigan Tech, Jared?
Definitely. I think there are two that will play in the NHL, and it's the first one, Steven Sardarian. He's the obvious one. Where's he drafted to? Is it Buffalo?
Is he drafted?
I'd have to double check.
I did not know he was drafted.
And Sardarian.
This is news to me.
I think he's drafted. Yeah, 88th overall in 2021 by the Buffalo Sabres.
Yep.
So, I mean, Steven Sardarian's the obvious one, right? I mean, he's got 38 points in 30 games this year. He's one of the best facilitators in all of college hockey, one of the best playmakers in college hockey. I think he moves really well for his size. Yes. His size is 6'2", 187 pounds. If he was 217 pounds, it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, he's an absolute brick out there. The other one, though, is Max Koskoperty. And I actually think the ceiling is higher for Koskoperty than it is for Sardarian. He has more offensive upside. He's a true two-way forward. Again, the size to back it up. I think the fact that Koskoperty is also a center matters. He can, you know, if you're looking for a lane for a kid like, you know, a kid like Koskoperty to get to the NHL, you're probably thinking fourth line at best, third line forward, a good penalty killer. And a guy like Koskoperty at 6'1", 190 pounds, if he can become a really elite face-off taker, you will make your hay in the NHL. Kind of like a little bit of like a Nico Sturm role for the Wild fans listening. Like, you know, I'll go back to what Jaden Grant said on the show. Is if we're talking about other kids who could probably be a coach someday, like Jaden Grant's another one. You know, not the biggest points guy, but he's a college hockey player with good size. And we asked him, it's like, you know, how do you find a way to stick early in your career and find your role? And he's like, you know what? I had a coach tell me if you become really good at winning faceoffs and blocking shots, you're going to find yourself in the lineup for a lot of nights. And I think that's a message that sticks beyond college hockey. And that's a role I could see Koskoperty playing in really well, where it's maybe a point every three or four games, but he's going to go out there and win the first faceoff on a penalty kill. He's going to use that speed and that frame to put himself in a position to, you know, make a run at it. So that's where I'd go.
Sardarian 100% will probably make it to the NHL. And then outside of that, I'm 100% in agreement. Max Cuscipurdy is, you know, he was the one guy who scored a goal when they got beat 2 years ago in the NCAAs. And it was a hell of a goal too.
Yeah.
I love his game. And I really do think that like that path, going through the ECHL, the AHL, is so hard for some of these guys. Some of them make it, you know, and are able to come out on the other side. He's a guy that like, yeah, I think a lot of teams and those, you know, lower tier pro levels are going to find a lot of value in his game. And yeah, I like what you said too, that if he can assert himself on the dot, like, you can 100% make money doing that.
I think Cuscipurdy will sign an AHL deal too.
Yeah.
Whether it's after this year or after next year, I think he's going to skip the ECHL. Whether he ends up having to play in it at all is a different story, but I think his first pro contract will be an AHL deal.
Yeah.
All right. Trent, name an NHL talent you believe on Minnesota State.
Easiest one.
Alex Tracy. I think for sure going to get a chance at the pro level. He's a little undersized at the NHL level though.
I think it's Evan Murr.
Yeah, you know the size though.
Yeah, the thing.
There's questions there.
The Tracy size is a much bigger concern because I mean we have kind of proof of it with Dryden McKay that the size didn't quite work in the AHL and he's bounced around quite a bit. I think Evan Murr having the upside that he does, and he's 6 foot, 183 pounds. Like it's not like elite size to, you know, go undrafted and find your way in the NHL. But he's 22 points this year already in 28 games. He had 27 points last year.
The offensive upsides, no team's going to overlook that too.
I think he needs to become a little bit of a better skater. I don't see the skating ability in Evan Murr that I do for like a Hayden Hennin or again, like a Chase Pietola. But that's probably, I think, where I'd go. Tracy would be like the feel-good story of the year if he got to the NHL. He's 5'11", 183 pounds. I mean, how many goalies in the NHL are under 6 feet? It's just not Saros. Really a lane. Saros, I think, is Jonathan Quick under 6 feet? I know.
I think he is 6 foot. Let me check. That's a good question.
So it's like the Matthias Scholl thing where he lists himself at 5'10", but he's not sniffing 5'10". I can say that because I asked 6'1". Him about that last year. 6'1". Okay. Yeah. So yeah, I Tracy would be like a fun story, but I don't see it happening. And I talk about another guy who could be a coach. I mean, holy cow.
Yeah.
But
move on to the next team here. We'll move to Northern Michigan, Jared.
I got nothing. I mean, Oliver Ionashin would be the fun one, but
the question's essentially, who do you think's the most talented player on the team?
Well,
yeah, kind of, but like even then for for some of the other teams, like for Bowling Green, like the most talented player on their team is Quinn Emerson, I think.
Yeah.
And I don't see him playing in the NHL. Ionashin is like the most fascinating story in college hockey for so many different reasons. Like the stats are unbelievable, and the fact that he has a record of 2-12-0 is, I mean, kind of funny if we're being honest. But he's 5'10" and he's 163 pounds.
Yeah,
like even if he hits like a 20-year-old growth spurt, he's not getting to 6'3". I think his size might turn him off from other D1 teams. Like that's how much of an issue the size is for him. I think Northern Michigan is probably the one where we just throw our hands in the air and say maybe next year they'll have a freshman come in.
We'll move right on to the next team then. Trent, St. Thomas.
Tobias Pitka is one. I'll throw him out there for Northern Michigan.
He was World Junior guy, right? Yep.
Yeah, World Juniors wins a ton of faceoffs. He's 6'4", 225 pounds. That's a good one. He's getting going a little bit in the second half. He had a lot of injuries in the first half. Tobias Pica, and like fingers crossed for Northern Michigan, he's there next year.
All righty, St. Thomas, Trent.
All right, look, I'm going to go with my heart here.
We have the same answer.
Lucas Wallin.
Yes, he's playing in the NHL someday.
It has to, right? How cool of a story would that be? Also, how, like, has there ever been a player that's gone from the NHL 3 to the NHL?
Oh, man. Now you gave me homework because I'll find it after this show.
Yeah.
As a NHL 3 appreciator like myself, I will find this answer. Yeah, no, I remember a couple weeks ago going to St. Thomas and, I'm up in the press box with St. Thomas SID Tony Pesquezzi, one of my favorite SIDs in the CCHA. And we were up there and we were talking about this and I was like, Tony, like, you can call me crazy, but I am convinced that Lucas Wallin will find a way to play in the NHL someday. He goes, I've been telling people that for years and they all think I'm crazy. And I'm like, it's not crazy. Like when you watch him play, first of all, the speed, like he has game breaking speed in the CCHA. And
yeah,
it's pretty rare when you see that. Like, I think his ability to play physical kind of makes up for his size in a lot of ways. He's probably the smartest player in the CCHA. And then kind of going back to like the Riley Funk, the Cole Smith thing, like there are some guys that just have it. And for a kid to start in the NHL 3, go to the NHL, go to the USHL, find a way on a D1 program, and now be leading that D1 program into most likely their first NCAA tournament appearance. Like there are some kids that just have it. And the leadership aspect cannot be overlooked. The way the players talk about him, I would be a little surprised if he gets through his entire pro hockey career and he doesn't get a shot in the NHL someday. Cause I mean, he is an organizational dream.
I gotta go. I mean, there's a couple on this roster though. Chase Czeslock is going pro. He's 21 assists this season, no goals, 21 assists, which is just absurd. 6'3", 205 pounds. He's a guy that I 100% see there. Carson Musser obviously been drafted too. I think he'll get his shot at some point.
Lucas Van Vliet for sure.
Freshman killing for him.
He needs to put on weight. He's 6'2", 181 pounds. But talk about a big second half. He's already up to 31 points in 27 games now, and he had his point streak snapped on Saturday. But he had points of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. He had an 8-game point streak. And only two of those games were games he had 1 point. Six of them were multi-point games. I mean, he is probably the most gifted offensive freshman in the league. Drafted seventh round by the Vegas Golden Knights too. So I think Lucas Van Vliet is a kid that could be in the NHL someday. But he will spend most of his collegiate career in the NCHC too, though. So
yep.
It's kind of like a cheating answer for him and like a Nathan Pilling.
Yeah.
So
we'll move on to the next questions here. This is combined questions from Grant Ryer and Kellen Maloche. The first one being, with Oklahoma State's rumored exploration into D1 hockey and with a couple of CCHA and NSIC guys that we've had on the pod, who do you predict will be the next to get D1 hockey out of the NSIC? And we'll go to you, Trent, with that.
D1 out of the NSIC. Who is the school that was talking about it a bunch? Was it Moorhead?
No, the three to choose from essentially would be UMary, Jamestown, or
Minot State.
Because they have affluent Acha teams.
Minot.
I think it'd be UMary.
Yeah.
Because UMary's already doing the trips to Denver and CC. They play in some of those exhibitions. To be honest, I think the answer is none of them. The cost to do college hockey.
You got
to
get you a T. Denny Sanford if you won't get one of the D1 teams now.
Oh, yeah. UMary is, I believe, a fully funded athletics program. Like every single kid has a full ride at UMary. Yeah, I could be mixing it up with Minot, but I'm pretty sure it's UMary.
Wow.
Yeah, they have a very well-funded athletics program. And I think
Yes, when it's fully funded. Just Google it.
Sweet. I'm glad I remembered that. I think the place to start with, like, the exploration of college hockey in Oklahoma State is, like, Oklahoma State's not getting college hockey. Like, sure, they've explored it, but I think every Division I team has explored it at some point, whether it's been publicly revealed or not. The Spit and Chicklets saying that Oklahoma State is getting D1 hockey by 2030. Look, I like the Spit and Chicklets guys as much as the rest of them, but that was a miss. I mean, it was the renderings of the rink were designed by an architecture student. I mean, they're not even real renderings. The thing to remember about the expansion of college hockey is that Power Four schools are probably not going to get involved, at least not for the foreseeable future. There's some maybe minor exceptions with, like, an Illinois, but even then, Illinois, who was close to getting in around COVID, and then COVID happens and they have to kind of retool. Illinois is probably not getting college hockey, at least for the foreseeable future as well. And the reason for this is that all of these Power Four schools are opt-in schools to the House settlement, which means that they get to take part in the full weight of the benefits of revenue sharing, where that comes with the schools can make direct NIL payments to the players. And when we go around the Power Four schools, the one constant at every single one of them is that football is king. And if you have an absorbent amount of money that you can give to a group of people to start a hockey program, that is money that can be used for college football and college basketball. And whether it's what we want or not, that's kind of how it has to be for these schools. Because if football is king, and if football has the ability to fund the rest of your school, not just the athletic department, but the rest of your school, that has to take priority. So if Oklahoma State, let's say it costs, you know, X amount of million dollars to start hockey, that is a football-rich part of the country and a football-rich donor base and a football-rich athletics program. All of those people that donate that money, whether if it's a collection of like a sum of collective money, they want it to go to football. They want to revive the football program that is in the absolute dumpster right now, like in the post-Mike Gundy era. I think the lane for a Power Four school to get in is, I mean, Trent kind of alluded to it, but it is like one donor who really, really, really wants hockey.
Yeah, and that's why I agree with you. Like, these bigger schools aren't going to waste the money on it because of football and basketball and how much it means to them. That's where they make their money. That's mm-hmm. where they find their revenue. I think when you start seeing schools that follow that model that Augustana used, where you found one big donor and then you got a lot of excitement and you got a lot of donors involved, right? That's how Midco mm-hmm. came to life. That is when you can be serious about, or know whether a school is serious about adding D1 hockey. And I think there will be expansion. I'm not like, I think it's going to happen. I think it will be from schools that we don't more so expect, though. It's not going to be these Oklahoma States. You know, you've heard rumors about North Carolina and Georgia, Illinois,
UNLV,
and some of these club programs are really successful and do well. But that's it. That's all they need. That's all some of these schools need. They don't need to make this big any bigger than it is. You know what I mean? Like, especially at a school like Georgia. You're going to take all that. You're going to take a bunch of money away and build a $200 million arena. Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure football fans are going to be real happy about that.
The other thing too, then you made a good point about the schools that we don't expect. Like, it's going to be D2 and D3 schools that want to dip their toes in the D1 pool with Division I college hockey. Schools like Augustana, Bemidji State, Minnesota State, Minnesota Duluth, St. Cloud State, right? Like the Colorado College, another one, right? Like
Sioux Falls. You go up and,
sure. Yeah, talk about poor schools. I think, is it Marist that is getting Division I hockey? I think it's Marist. I could be wrong on that. Tennessee Tech was an HBCU school that was trying to get Division I hockey.
Tennessee State.
Tennessee State. Sorry. it's going to be smaller time Division I schools, Division II schools that want D1 hockey, or Division III schools that want D1 hockey. And it's most likely going to be private schools for those D2 schools. And the thing that people need to kind of separate themselves from is, just because a school like a power school or a school like UNLV has an affluent ACHA program, it does not mean that they are ready to make the jump to college hockey. One, you have to have a conference to go into. UNLV, theoretically, like, it wouldn't be the most surprising thing in the world if they found themselves in the NCHC.
Here's what I'll say about UNLV, and it's similar to what we saw with Tennessee State. Tennessee State had that Preds backing money. If UNLV could get that Golden Knights backing money, that's something that I can see putting them over the edge to get a varsity program. But, you know, sure, they're a really good ACHA team.
Very, very good. Yeah, they're one of the best. They're one of the best teams in the country at the club level. The problem is finding a conference for them to be in. And in an ideal world, they probably end up in the NCHC, and then the NCHC boots out another team, or they go to 12. However, it's not a feasible thing for UNLV to say, okay, here's a college hockey team, now start charting around the country and using money that who knows if you have it, right? And again, UNLV is a school that's invested a lot of money into football. They gave Dan Mullen, former coach at Florida and former coach at Mississippi State, a boatload of money to be a contending Group of Five team every year. Unless you get that big one or two donations specifically for hockey, a lot of those donors want UNLV to compete at football and basketball. I mean, they're a very successful Mountain West basketball program too, and there are benefits to have competing in the Mountain West and making the NCAA tournament there as well.
There's something to be said about these untraditional markets though, and what hockey's meant to them. I mean, like the Golden Knights there's so much hockey enthusiasm in Vegas now, and it's the same in Nashville. The Preds, you know, have done the same, and that's part of the reason why Tennessee State was so serious about this and, you know, ultimately had to fall on the sword with it. But, you know, I think a lot of that is, you know, injection from the NHL level of just interest, general interest. People want to go watch hockey in some of these markets. Like, Golden Knights games are packed every night, man. Preds games are packed every night.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah. I'll get into the second part of the question. I'll kind of get into the Western part.
I'll lead us into that. So yeah, if we do see that expansion, multiple teams coming into the CCHA or the NHAC, do we see a division into an East-West format, or how do you think those conferences will need to be split up if we see multiple teams come into them?
I don't see there being an East-West thing. It's just never been like that for any other college sports. So I don't see them doing it for hockey. How the CCHA and the NCHC will like have to adjust is probably dependent on where the college hockey teams come from. Like, I do think that there are too many players to fit into college hockey, right? Like, 100%. The recruiting pool got 1,000 players bigger. There are too many kids that are good enough to play college hockey, and there are not enough teams for them to go to. The college hockey expansion, the way I kind of see it going, is that a handful of D2 and D3 schools over the course of the next 10 to 15 years, maybe 20 years, start adding college hockey teams, and that 63 number creeps closer to 70 to 75. If we're talking in a 20-year span down the road, right? They see the opportunity for a D2 school to profit off of hockey, dip their toes into D1. Maybe it's a school like an Augustana that was trying to go D1 for the entirety of their athletics program. They got hockey there. They couldn't quite get there the rest of the way. You know, it's an exploration thing, right? For a lot of these schools, into seeing what they can and can't do. And then when Power Four schools start seeing other schools, like lower level schools, whether it be FCS, Group of Five, D1 school, or D2 schools, or D3 schools, start profiting off of hockey, is when they will jump into it, because the mold is there for Big Ten schools to do it. I mean, Penn State makes money off of hockey. Minnesota makes money off of hockey.
And they're new.
I think
Wisconsin. Penn State's what?
And they're new.
Yeah. 5 years?
Penn State? No, like 15 years.
Has it been 15? Okay.
Yeah, like 10 to 15 years, something like that. Okay. 14 years. It's 14 years for Penn State. Like, I think the Power Four schools will be reactionary in that sense, where they will not be proactive. With that said, like, how does that change the CCHA and the NCHC? Well, okay, let's say the NCHC will probably be the driver in this of, you know, let's say there's two more schools that they want to add, and it gets to 12. But maybe they don't want to be at 12, and they'd rather be at 10, because 10, if you have 10 schools, you probably would have, like, it's a little backwards, but if you have 10 good schools, you probably have a better chance of getting more in the NCAA tournament, because you have two less schools beating up on everybody else and hurting their NPI standing, right? It's also comes down to, the geographical side of it, of where the schools are coming from. Maybe the NCHC, which is trying to brand itself as the national, like, maybe they'd say, oh, we can be the national, but just a little less national, so it's a little easier on travel. But let's say they do get to 12, they want to go back to 10, and they boot out a few schools. And I would imagine they would do probably St. Cloud, because St. Cloud's dirt poor right now, and they're going to start falling behind a little bit more in terms of, like, the financial backing. Maybe Duluth is in that conversation. I know Miami of Ohio is having a good year, but they're suddenly becoming so far out east, where maybe they'd rather play in a more eastern base conference if they could get into, I don't know, they'd probably have to start a new conference, if we're being honest. But then I think you'd see, like, okay, where would the CCHA react there? Would the CCHA pick up Miami or St. Cloud or Duluth? Would the CCHA kind of morph into what the NSIC is? And it'd be like Duluth, St. Cloud, Bemidji State, Minnesota State, Augustana, you pick up Lindenwood, you get an Ocho team to promote. And then the GLIAC would then be like Michigan Tech, Northern Michigan, Ferris State, Lake State, Miami, Bowling Green. And then they pick up a new school, like, in the Michigan, Ohio area, right? Like, this is our dream, Trent. Like, we've been dreaming of NSIC hockey for years.
The Northern Sun Hockey Conference. I believe there's already been a graphic made. Shout out to Andy. He's made the graphic.
The worst graphic we've ever seen.
He's pushing it, but he's all aboard, man. He's actually, I think he's going to start a Twitter burner account soon, too, if wouldn't surprise me. If you see it, you know who it is.
I should also mention, this is completely speculation. Like, there is no inclination that anything like this is even remotely happening. Like, we're talking 20 to 30 years down the road now, right? Yeah. But, like, when it comes to the CCHA and the NCHC adapting, I think it is the CCHA adapting to what the NCHC does and who the NCHC wants in their conference. And to be honest, if the NCHC expanded to 12, I think they would just keep it at 12. I don't think they'd kick out member schools from their conference. Oh, yeah. You can make a tournament work with 12.
We'll move on to the next question here. This one comes from Lucas Pancari. And I hope you guys kind of know what it means, because it's pretty short and brief, and I don't know. Ferris and Northern, who you got for eighth?
I love it.
I love this question.
I don't know enough about what's going on.
Well, we're going to find next weekend a lot more about this. But
the relegation bowl, baby.
Yep, we have the relegation bowl between these two teams. I like Northern right now. I mean, I think
they're – love Northern.
Yeah, they're –
definitely.
Even in their series that they got – swept by Augustana. They got great goaltending from Oliver Young Ashton. And, you know, obviously Augustana did a good job shutting them down to blank them. I think it was 5-0 in the two games combined. But Northern, outside of that, I mean, they beat Michigan Tech at the MAC. And then last weekend they get 3 more points against Bemidji. And Ferris State just continues to slide. They continue to have goaltending problems. Right now, I like Northern. I mean, we'll learn, like I said, we're going to learn a lot more next week about these two.
Definitely. I'm pretty confident that Northern is going to take more of the point share next weekend. And I mean, as someone, I've had Northern in the eighth spot for, I think, the entire month of January.
Yeah, me too.
In our THG hockey power rankings. Yeah, so... it's just a tough year for Ferris, and I'll say something nice about Ferris right now. They have a decent recruiting class coming in. They tried to build their entire team off of transfers this year, and they didn't really have much of a choice. I mean, Brett Riley came in from Long Island, an independent school, and it's just tough to kind of build a competitive roster in 1 year. I think the intriguing part of it was how would all the Long Island guys do in the CCHA. Trent, and you think you and I probably thought they'd do a little bit better than they're doing right now, or that they've done this season. It just hasn't worked. It hasn't clicked.
You know, they're competitive in a lot of games. I mean, I've seen them be non-competitive in some games, but like, you know, and I think every series they show, you know, like, whoa, they're the better team right now. And then they just can't, it's like 60 minutes. They're not able to put together a full 60 minutes. I think that's their bigger issue.
They can't score.
Yeah, they can't score. I mean, but then again, you look like they opened the season and beat Western. They beat the defending national champs on their home ice.
Yeah, they also got outshot like 50-15 in that game. Like,
still,
that's a one-off of a goalie play. A win's a win for sure. And Northern doesn't have a win like that this season. But the thing is, all of Northern's wins kind of count for something right now.
I was going to say, too, what have you done for me lately? And Northern, I think, going on the road and beating Michigan Tech at this point in the season tells
for
me
sure.
more.
That's a about, massive win.
Yeah.
And it may have torpedoed Michigan Tech and the NPI stuff, right? Like, that's
– yeah.
They dropped, like, 8 spots from that game.
They're sitting at 20, and they're pretty solidly at 20 right now.
Right.
With not a ton of chances, really, to move up. I mean, this weekend's a good chance for them. You get a sweep against Augustana, it's going to go a long way.
And not that Northern Michigan's point totals per player are much better, but for the oldest team in the country, Ferris State, Gavin Best has 18 points. Josh Jari has 15 points. Max Itagaki has 14 points. Those are their top three scorers this year, and they play 28, 28, and 24 games. I mean, they just have such a problem trying to score. This weekend we'll learn a little bit more about Ferris State too, because Bemidji State has certainly had their defensive struggles in the month of January. The games seem to be just a little bit more open, so maybe we'll see some of those Ferris State kids start, you know, putting something together, get some momentum going into the next weekend against Northern. But I think Northern will take 4+ points next weekend.
That's a thing. You mentioned something we haven't really talked about. Ferris State tied for the oldest team in college hockey with Niagara at an average of 23.1 years old.
Yeah. Old team. No true freshman.
We'll move on quick here. This one's a two-parter from a listener in Belfouche. What more do you need to see to be convinced that the Falcons are a home ice team? And conversely, what more do you need to see to be convinced that the Mavericks are not a home ice team in the playoffs?
Yeah, this is loaded. I am already pretty convinced that Bowling Green is a home ice team. What more do I need to see to be convinced the Mavs are not? I'm not fully convinced they're not.
Oh, this is tough. Pulling up schedules
now. So you're saying you need to see more. You need to see them lose at home again.
I think both these teams are playing well right now. I think they both look like home ice teams. And that's what sucks about the top five, is like one of those top five teams is not going to have home ice. And that is wild to me, because all five of them are good. And like four of them, all five of them are inside the top 30 in the MPI. Four of them are top 20.
Right. I'll throw this out. I still think it could be a six-team race, or a three-team race for the last spot. Now, hear me out. Like, Bemidji State put itself in a massive hole.
But Minnesota State's at the schedule, coming up, man.
But they have two games against Ferris this weekend.
Yep.
If you're trying to map out where Bemidji State needs points to get back in the mix, they have to take
all
six.
Sweep. Yeah.
They go down to Minnesota State next weekend. You have a team in front of you, right? Like, you take 5 or 6 points. Granted, it's a really tough ask and an unfair ask to tell Bemidji State to go into Mankato and take 6 points. But you're right back in the thick of it. And then you end the season at home against St. Thomas, who might not be playing for anything. You add in the fact that Minnesota State they're off this weekend. Then they play Bemidji State next weekend. And if we go by the same math, they take 1 point at the most if in this hypothetical scenario. Again, hypothetical. I'm going to preface it. It's a hypothetical. Then they go to Bowling Green. They still have a series against Bowling Green in the mix. That series is split 3-3. Bemidji State is back in the mix if those first two things happen. That being said, I do not think that's going to happen. I think Bemidji is firmly in that sixth spot. I do not see them going to Mankato. I think St. Thomas will still play their guys, and they'll still play competitive hockey in that last weekend. So I do not think Bemidji State will move out of the sixth spot, which means it will likely come down to that February 20th, February 21st series in Bowling Green at Slater Family Ice Arena between Minnesota State and Bowling Green.
Yeah. And that's going to be the deciding factor right there. I mean, like, that might determine home ice even. So this is another thing to consider. If Augustana, Michigan Tech this weekend goes one way or the other, if like Vikings 5 or 6 points, Michigan Tech gets 5 or 6 points, it makes it so much easier for Minnesota State to vault up into that home ice spot.
Definitely. I think.
And Augustana could be the odd man out.
Yeah. And that, well, like the interesting thing with, to kind of go back to the Bowling Green stuff, I find them a little bit fascinating because, sure, they're on a run, right? Like, I know they just tied Notre Dame in a home and home, but, and Notre Dame isn't having a great year, but it's a Big Ten team. You're playing a weirdly timed non-conference series at the end of January. It might have been the last, if you exclude the independents, it might have been the last non-conference series in all of college hockey this year. But if we look at Bowling Green's run that they've been on in the month of January, it came against a reeling Ohio State team. Ferris State, they swept Ferris State on the road. They split with Lake State at home. They only scored 3 goals in 6 periods of that series. They come to Bemidji and beat a reeling Bemidji State team at the time, and then they split with Notre Dame. Bowling Green ends the season with St. Thomas, Augustana, Minnesota State, and Michigan Tech. I am not convinced they are a home ice team. That is arguably the most brutal month of February in the CCHA. I mean, granted, you get St. Thomas and Minnesota State at home. That's
two games
big.
In hand. Two games in hand, though. That's
another two games in hand. That's another big thing too. I think that trip to Michigan Tech will be really, really tough, especially with Michigan Tech also fighting for positioning at the end of the year. I think when I think of Bowling Green as a team and what more I need to see them pick a goalie. I need to see them pick the guy that's going to take the net and not give it up.
I'll go a step further too. Just this weekend, I need to see them get points at home against St. Thomas, which is going to be hard enough. I mean, if they don't, they're probably the odd man out.
At the same time, devil's advocate of that is if they sweep St. Thomas at home, they're firmly a home ice team. I think if you use those two games in hand over St. Thomas and take 6 points off the Tommies, not only are they firmly going to be a home ice team, the rest of the CCHA is suddenly wide open again, which it does not feel wide open now. And I know St. Thomas is up in first place with 45 points. Augie has 41. Michigan Tech is 40. And Minnesota State is 37. If St. Thomas is sitting there with 45 or 46 points at the end of the weekend, this conference is a lot tighter than it feels right now. So,
yeah.
For Minnesota State, like, what do I need to be convinced of them not being a home ice team? For me, it comes down to what Bowling Green's going to do. Like, how does Bowling Green get through this month of February? Because I think Bowling Green is a better team. I think outside of goaltending, they're kind of been better in almost every aspect this year. I think Bowling Green needs to be a little bit more disciplined. I don't think their penalty kill is good enough to keep taking the amount of penalties they take every game. I'm looking at you, Gustav Sternberg. Stop taking game misconducts. Why do you keep doing this? Like, they're incredibly easy to avoid. Stop doing it. Although, interesting note about Gustav Sternberg, and I want to make sure I get this right, but I think it was who was it on Twitter? But Gustav Sternberg is listed at 3 game misconducts this year, which would have meant he was suspended last Saturday.
Yes, I saw that. And he played.
He was not suspended because, according to Terry Burton, who is a great follow on Twitter for Bowling Green stuff, he does a lot of kind of independent stuff. Terry Burton does a lot of good stuff. He's been one of my favorite follows this year because I don't get a lot of Bowling Green fans on the timeline a lot. But he said he's working to get confirmation, but BG appealed and was successfully getting a previous game misconduct removed for Sternberg. So one of his previous two game misconducts apparently was taken off the books. He said he has not been able to confirm that yet on Twitter, but again, I mean, Gustav Sternberg with one of the craziest stats in all of college hockey. Just the penalties. Hang on, I'm pulling it up right here, but give me a second. Pims per game. Oh. Clicked
Sternberg, on the wrong thing. Sternberg?
Sternberg's Pims per game are very, very funny because he's taken a lot of penalty minutes. Yeah. That's not he's taken 70, according to CHA, he's taken 77 penalty minutes in 17 games this year, which is the most penalized player in the country. Trevor Taillon is ninth in the country in penalty minutes, but second in the CCHA in penalty minutes with 55. He has played 11 more games than Gustav Sternberg.
That's so insane.
It's my favorite set of the CCHA this year is that he just can't stay out of the box. But so for Bowling Green, what do I need to be more convinced for them to be on my team? I need to see them pick a goalie. I need to see them put up at least take a game off of St. Thomas, and I need to see them be more disciplined. And what do I need to see for Minnesota State to not make the CCHA or to not be a home ice team? Probably need to see them drop a game against Bemidji State. Like that feels like if they take two or fewer points from Bemidji State, and then I think they're probably firmly in that fifth spot. Like that's going to be the pivotal series for Minnesota State.
That summarizes it pretty well, I feel like. We'll move into our final section here. We do have quite a few of these, so we'll just kind of cook through them. The first question comes from Cam from the Chattin' Mavericks podcast, and he asks, who's the best podcast out of the podcasts in the CCHA?
CCHA Reporter's Corner?
I would think so, right? You can't ask that question.
Certainly not Chattin' Mavs.
I was on Chasing McNaughton this week, so I guess I'll say outside of the CCHA Reporters Corner, which is the best podcast. You don't get mailbag episodes like that in any other podcast. I'm gonna say Chasing McNaughton. Well, except when they had me on for 2 hours, Tim.
I also am going on Chad Mavs on Sunday, so they do a good stuff. You know what? I did listen to their episode last week. They interviewed a production guy in the, kind of on the back end stuff, and it was really cool. And I remember I got it. Yeah, I did some of the stuff I interviewed a production guy almost a year ago when I wrote the Mankato story about the restarted game, and it was really fascinating. They do awesome stuff up there. It's actually through one cable that's wired in from I think it's called Bethany College, and it's like literally just down the street from the Civic Center in Mankato, but that's where all the production stuff is done. It's not done on site. And the Chad Mavs guys had one of the back end production. I'm so sorry for forgetting his name, but I did listen to that episode. It was really, 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 really good one. So, but outside of that, yeah, no, I'm not Chad Mavs. They troll me too much on Twitter.
What about the Beavs, man?
Oh, Beaver Banner. They do great stuff,
Beaver
too.
Beaver Banner.
Shout out Ian. Yeah, I watched the women's game in Grand Rapids last weekend with Ian for a little bit. And, they do fantastic work. And they bring on a friend of the show, Beaver Territory, Lucas Pipenhagen. Those interviews are really good.
What's that show that Perry does? What's that one?
Who cares?
I've heard about it. I haven't watched it.
Who's Perry?
I don't know. I'm just asking. I was just asking.
Is that the curling guy?
Yeah, the curling guy. You know what I'm talking about? Okay, so you do know what I'm talking about.
Sure. Laxgrift?
I think he does a CCHA podcast, but anyways, I've heard that works pretty good, yeah.
Not important.
But to summarize, it's CCHA Reporter's Corner.
Of course.
For sure.
Of course.
All right, the next the question comes from somebody who Jared might know, Annabelle. What's the craziest moment in the CCHA so far this year? We'll start with Trent.
The craziest moment?
I have one.
Maybe Augie's like ice fiasco that they had against Bemidji State.
Oh, that's a good one. That whole night was fascinating. Was the fact that they were letting people into the building when the game wasn't going
to
happen.
Yeah, I know. I was walking into the arena and some woman goes, "It's canceled," and I'm like, "No, I would know, ma'am." Come on. And so I'm walking into the building and then I get up there and they're like, "Yeah, everybody's just standing around." I'm like, "What is going on?" You know,
I think my craziest moment is the fact that Lake State's getting $1 million revolving donation every year. Like when I heard about that, I was stunned. Like it's an anonymous donation that they get every single year. Like, that's, and then figuring out how they use the money. Like, I'm pretty sure Lake State is chartering to every maybe non-UP school this year, if I remember correctly. I know they chartered to Bemidji. I think, did they charter to Sioux Falls? I'm pretty sure they did. I can't remember, but I think they're only one of two schools that regularly charter with Minnesota State, I believe. So that, I don't know, that blew me away. And then the ice stuff at Augustana. I also think Bemidji State not being able to turn the lights on against Northern Michigan was very funny. Like, that was, they had a cool down timer on the lights at the Sanford Center, and somebody pressed the wrong light to turn them on after the starting lineups, and they actually turned the lights off. And the cool down timer was 15 minutes, and there's no override. And so they all just stood on the ice for 15 minutes and waited for the lights to fully turn back on.
So, that's crazy. Now,
you could hear Sarah Torrey from the press box.
Of course.
Like, what are we doing? What are we doing? What's happening? And Dave Shyack was just like so disinterested. He soon started the game with like only 16 skaters that night. They just got their teeth kicked in the night before. Like, it was an eerie feeling in the rink for that 15 minutes.
Oh man, that is good.
The next question from Annabelle Jarrett's girlfriend is, and you can interpret this however you want, but which team in the CCHA gives each other the most forehead kisses? And so you could go, that could mean a lot of different things, but.
Who's the forehead kissing team in the conference?
It's the collection of Tech Hockey Guide people kissing Bill McCult's bald head.
I'll tell you that. Yeah, that's a good one. St. Thomas is kicking some ass, man.
Oh, big time.
I think they're kissing a lot of foreheads over there in St. Paul. I mean,
so they're getting along well kissing foreheads.
Yes. Yes.
I'm kissing Lucas Wallen's forehead. Yeah.
Here, I like that answer. We got some more from Cam here too. Let's run through these.
So we'll go back to Cam here. Here and down, are you guys gonna miss Tracer as much as us from Cam?
Not as much as Cam, but I will miss Alex Tracy.
I'll say yes and no. I mean, he makes covering Bemidji State games when they're in a slump really difficult because he's really good.
Fourth wall broken down here. Alex Tracy, one of the funner like interviews we've done. Getting to talk, like he's great. I will miss him. Probably not as much as Cam.
Probably not, but I will miss him quite a bit. He is the nicest kid I've ever met in college hockey.
And then so we'll go to the next question from Cam, which is the best CCHA burner account, and why is it the Mayo Maniac?
It's not the Mayo Maniac. He trolls me too much. I do love Cam. The best CCHA burner account, far and away. Actually, not far and away. There's two of them. NMUYB.
Yes.
Because he's like almost a legit reporter, friend of the show. Evan Gary, he's fantastic dude. But my all-time favorite is Grease.
Grease is awesome, man.
So a little funny story. Like, it's Saturday night, game two between Bemidji State, St. Thomas, in St. Paul. And Grease sends me a DM that says, Section 218 is the best section. I look over. There is not a single person in Section 218. And so I send him back. It's empty. And he goes, and then he says, look up and wave. And there's this guy walking down the suite section, waving his arms in the air towards the press box. Like a 10-year-old going to the circus. Like, it was so funny. Yeah, Grease is the best. He's a great follow too for if you're a Minnesota sports fan, because he's just one of one. Yeah,
Grease has the best and most heated rivalry in the CCHA.
This is a he's trying to get us here, Jared.
see, this is why I host, because I get to just lay these out there. I don't know enough about the CCHA.
I'm gonna stick with Northern Michigan and Michigan Tech. The UP, man, it's cold up there, but that rivalry heats it up.
I'll go Bemidji State, Minnesota State. Those two schools hate each other.
Minnesota, though, I'm gonna go Minnesota State and St. Thomas.
Pretty contentious. Yeah, but the thing is, like, it's a little new and it's gonna go away.
It's true.
Like when St. Thomas goes, like there's like hate between Bemidji State and Minnesota State that is born there outside of hockey too. Like there's some distaste there. And with the amount of postseason meetings they've had, and like this, some of the postseason meetings going the way they've gone,
yes,
as is certainly Cam, that is certainly a heated rivalry.
Cam has one last question. This one's for you, Jared. What's your facial hair routine?
I do it a mustache for a while, but I've been so lazy at shaving. Like it looks disgusting right now. Well, actually, it's not too bad right there.
No, I ain't too bad.
It looked pretty tight. It looked like you were taking care of it.
Yeah, no, it just had, like, I think I trimmed it up 2 or 3 days ago and it hasn't quite come back in yet. But the funny thing is, I don't have a facial hair routine, but the funny thing is before the show started, I had a beard basically as big as Trent's, a little bushy, like Amish level beard, and with a mustache, obviously. And then we had all these logos made and stuff. And then I shaved my beard before the first episode of the show. So the entire logo of the old version of the Reporter's Corner was essentially rendered useless because I shaved, which is kind of funny.
We're gonna get Jared's whole facial hair routine. Like, we're gonna get a 1 through 10 like step guide.
Get the and then scrub. We'll, you gotta yep. use the roller. You
we'll,
gotta.
We'll run that. We'll run that out with next week's episode, just as a separate article, so everybody can know. That's a really good question.
I have a whole routine on how I like shave my head. Like that's takes. This is nothing. Like the shave, the head routine, like the like the preventative product you gotta put in, so you don't get like ingrown hairs and stuff. Look, hey, being bald isn't always as glamorous as it looks.
I've never seen the top of your head. I haven't seen it without a hat.
I've got a Brett Meerman cut.
Yeah, he's got the full Meerman.
We'll move on to the next question here. This one comes from Evan Gary via Twitter. Who is the fella's favorite CCHA YB? And I had to Google what YB means, but the people need to know.
I mean, it's Evan. Yeah. Diaz is up there, though.
Diaz, but he's graduated now.
Yeah, that's true.
He's since graduated. Also, I'll throw some love to the BSU one too. I've helped him with his sports homework for NDSU.
Evan, though, man, his like the way he stays on top of recruiting is impressive stuff.
Yeah, it is.
Like
he's the best reporter they got in Marquette right now.
Really?
Because like, I don't know what the hell that newspaper does.
Yeah. But,
yeah, shout out Evan. He's great. And shout out Diaz too for the for some reason wanting to get a picture with every single CCHA Twitter personality at every road rink he goes to. It's one of the funniest bits going.
It's like he's treating them like Pokemon cards, man.
Yeah. And he had the CCHA watch flag, like, which was the dumbest flag ever. I was cracking up when he brought it to Bemidji, but yeah.
The next one comes from Joe Daniels via Twitter. How and why will NMU win the CCHA tourney and make an NCAA appearance?
Oliver Young Ashton.
Yeah, your goalie carries you.
That's it. That's it. It's Oliver Young Ashton. Let's see how hot he can get.
Yeah, they're going to need some goal scoring, though. I don't know.
They can find one a game. They have no problem getting one a game. It's the next one that usually trip them up.
Yeah, that's you're asking a lot to win the CCHA, especially this year. Like in other years, I'd have been like, okay, maybe, yeah, sure. This year, it's like so loaded at the top. Like God help you. I don't know that it's.
Hey, happening. You get past that first round, though, you're only 6 periods away from the NCAA tournament.
Could you imagine? Like, that's like a so they would be like probably a 7-8 win team in the NCAA tournament. They'd be like 8-26 or something.
Yeah. So what they have, they're 3-24 right now. That's to get the 8 seed, you have to probably beat Ferris at least once
in the tournament too. So
then that's, we'll put them at 5 going into the CCHA tournament. What, and that's with 2 wins over Ferris, or a win over Ferris and a win over somebody else.
Yep.
Then you win 2 games in the first round, that puts them at 7. That's a 9-win team going to the NCAA tournament. it would be the I don't think it's a stretch to say that it would be legitimately one of the craziest stories in the history of college hockey.
Oh yeah, it would be. It would certainly be.
And you have to look at it in the scope of what happened in like a year and a half for that.
Yeah, all hypothetical, but guys.
If Northern Michigan makes the tournament, Trent and I will personally drive to Marquette and take up Dave Shiak on his offer for Sodans in the summer.
100%.
That is our promise.
That is.
If they go to the tournament, we will do an in-person show with Dave Shiak, probably from a Marquette bar, having a couple pops.
Yeah.
I'd like to see that. That'd be fun.
It'll happen. That happens.
We move into our final question, which comes from Matt Cavender with the Tech Hockey Guide Discord. And it's the most important question, essentially. What is your favorite NU metal band outside of the Big Five, which includes Korn, Limp Bizkit, System of a Down, Linkin Park, and the Deftones? So outside of those five, who is your favorite?
This is the CCHA's president of nu metal too. So this is actually a very big question.
I have a question about the question, Trent. Would Evanescence be considered nu metal?
No, I don't think so. Matt might fight me on that.
I think it might.
Dude, look it up. What is their genre on? What does Evanescence call themselves? Because they run their Wikipedia.
That's a good question.
They call themselves alternative metal, gothic metal, gothic rock. Oh, it says new metal early. It does say new metal early.
That's what I was saying, because it's like a little bit of a tweener for new metal. Like it feels like it's like saying your favorite country star is Luke Bryan. Like like kind of country, but it's really not country, you know.
I had to push back on Cavender a little bit when he asked this question, because I don't fully like System of a Down being in this category, because System of a Down is like not my cup of tea. Music's cool. I've already seen Linkin Park live, and they're probably if you're talking about these, they're probably like my favorite in this list.
When did you see Linkin Park?
God, how long ago was that? Like, dude, I would have been like,
so it was before Chester. Okay, so not Resurgence Limp Bizkit.
No, this would have been like 2004, 2005. I think it might have been 2005.
Oh wow.
So yeah,
Trent, I was 8 years old.
20 years ago, dude. Yeah, I was like a freshman.
I was also eight.
freshman or sophomore in high school. Hell of a show.
I was playing T-ball.
One band who's not on here, POD. Was there? I would consider them nu metal. Slipknot, nu metal. I mean, you got to put them in there too, right? And yeah, who doesn't like Slipknot? Dude? Corey Taylor, like, come on.
Can I still go with Evanescence? Because I actually really like Evanescence, like it's kind of like tweener.
I'll allow it too. Cordell allows it. Cordell, do you have an opinion on this one?
Oh no, I listen to pretty much exclusively country, so that's why I wouldn't laugh. That's why I laughed when he said the Luke Bryan thing. I was like, yeah, that makes sense to me.
Luke Bryan's like technically country, so you kind of like, what other genre is Luke Bryan? It's just bad country.
It's what's become the new pop country. He was right on the forefront of that, and so essentially you could blame him for the downfall. There's been a new resurgence in country music, I feel like, with guys like Chris Stapleton really coming out a lot.
Oh, yes. And
yeah, I feel like we're getting a good push back into good country again from
a lot of guys. Would you consider Zach Bryan country?
Zach Bryan?
I don't fully consider him country. I think he's more of like folk in that folk mold.
Is it just between folk and country?
But it's like kind of country. Yeah,
little
like
bluegrassy.
He's certainly
country. You kind of have a Zach Bryan look going to you today, Cordell.
With the cut?
The hair.
I know.
With
the cut, the clean the clean facial hair, the shade, like the haircut. You're a guitar away from dressing up like Zach Bryan for Halloween.
That's the best compliment I've had in a while, so we'll take that.
Yeah, I don't hate Zach Bryan either. I like the music. I'll go with Evanescence. Yeah, I hate Luke Bryan.
I do.
Where would Noah Kahn shout out?
He's like folk. He's like folk.
He's firmly folk. He's like northeastern folk. Like that's we wouldn't consider him country, like, almost at all, right?
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't really. Yeah.
Become more and more popular is where I say that's where, like, people that used to listen to older country, it's kind of shifting to they listen to people like Noah Kahan and stuff versus more Luke Bryan.
The Great Divide is such a good song, too, by the way. Oh, what a song. I can't wait. New album comes out in April. Hopefully I get concert tickets, too.
Big tour coming. Yeah, I texted you that, Jared.
Yeah, trying. I mean, we're lining up for like the busiest week of my life with SummerSlam 2 days before or 3 days before a Noah Kahan concert.
Are you going to SummerSlam?
The plan is to go to SummerSlam at least Sunday. I don't know if I'll be able to get to Saturday because we have a golf tournament here that I have to cover that Saturday.
I wanted to go to the Rumble this year in Riyadh, but I didn't have time.
You missed. It wasn't even a good Rumble. Like
it was so bad.
Right winner is just not the right way to get there. I didn't hate the women's one. I see people dogging on the women's Rumble too much.
The women's Rumble was good. I hated the finish. Anyway,
I didn't hate the finish either. I don't understand what we're doing with the Bella Twins. I'm done with the Bella Twins. Like they don't do anything for. This was my first time watching Sol Ruka though.
She was awesome. She's
incredible.
There was a few women in that match, but Sol Ruka was the one that stood out. As a matter of fact, when she got going, I was like, oh, man, come on. Let Sol Ruka win this. She was like Jordan Grace last year. Like, she really got going, and everybody got rallied behind her. And then she got thrown out. Like, just – it's I hate the way that was – the men's one was just boring. I actually didn't hate the finish as much as most people.
Hate the finish either. I mean, I was fine with both winners. Like, I have no issue with both winners. Like, Liv Morgan deserved to win. And then
I get that Liv deserved it. I still don't care to see her in a main event match. Roman,
he's gonna have such a good feud with Punk.
He's gonna have an awesome match, like in an awesome feud build up. Like, it's gonna be great. Get over it, folks. Like, the match itself though was absolutely
that brilliant. Promo they cut on Monday. Against each other. I don't know if you watched. It was about 10 minutes.
I didn't see it. I didn't see Raw.
I saw it on Twitter. I'll send you the clip. It is amazing.
Okay.
The best Roman's ever been on the microphone.
Well, he's been really good though the past couple years. We're way off track here. This is a white guy's podcast, Jared, and we are taking this to wrestling links now. This is not going the way we've ever wanted to. I'll have to explain this to my kids one day. And defend myself. So we need to move on and close.
We have personally increased the price of podcast equipment in an hour and a half.
This was fun though. We appreciate everybody writing in comments, just sending in some questions and everything. You guys are awesome. We're gonna get some actual hockey talk back on the show next week. But this is a cool little step away from the realm. Awesome slate of CCHA hockey tonight and into tomorrow. The two huge series, really. I can't emphasize it enough. With Augustana going to Michigan Tech, and then you've got St. Thomas going to Bowling Green. Those are going to be two big series with these top teams in this conference.
Want to do some predictions quick? Just rip off some predictions for the weekend? This on a Friday.
Go ahead.
I think Bowling Green will take 4 points off St. Thomas. I think Augustana and Tech will split down the middle 3-3. And I think Bemidji State will take all six from Ferris. What am I missing? What's the other one I'm missing?
That's it.
That's it. Just the three. What do you got?
I'm going split Augie Tech, even split 3-3. I'm going to go even split Bowling Green St. Thomas. And then I'm going to go sweep Bemidji State. At home against Ferris.
5 point or 6 point sweep?
6 point sweep.
6 point sweep. Perfect. All right. Well, that was episode 48 of the Reporter's Corner. To watch this show and to see clips and highlights from this episode, head on over to Midwest Sports Plus, the home of the CCHA Reporter's Corner. Thank you to our producer and our host for the day, Cordell Wright, the Zach Bryan lookalike himself. For an audio-only version of the CCHA Reporter's Corner, subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts from. Follow us on Twitter at Trent Singer and at Jared Rebato BP. You can check out our work at BemidjiPioneer.com and SiouxFallsLive.com.